welcome to another exciting episode of Best of Five.
Exciting and off-center.
I'm sorry. What?
Well, now we're perfect, so it doesn't matter.
Shout-outs to Alon, cameraman, the host with the most, friend. The mustache got evened out with a little bit of the extra facial hair. I'm impressed. It looks better.
All right, okay. I thought it looked great before.
We'll have to take it to the audience. Blocker grab on Mike's facial hair.
Using our new BOV block and BOV, or BOVB and BOVG.
No. It's officially block.
Oh, it's
shout
block and grab
to
again.
Steve. I would toss to Steve, but unfortunately he's not on the stream. But before we go to his replacement, John Velociraptor Guerrero is joining us. He writes for EventHubs.com. And in a second, we're going to see what his face looks like. There it is.
Hey, what's up, guys?
How you doing, John? How have you been?
Not too bad. I just turned 30.
Yeah.
3 days ago. So that was an experience.
What do you mean? What was the experience like? I don't understand what you mean.
Well, the morning when I got up, as soon as I stood up, I was dizzy, and that was weird. And then every step to the bathroom, my knees clicked. And then I had this really strong urge to watch Murder, She Wrote, which is great.
I feel like you're being really rude right now to the 30-year-olds.
I can't. You can't be offended. I'm one of them.
Fair enough. All right. We're also joined by... Wait, who is that? I don't recognize that white beard and hat. Who do we got? Who's this? I'm sorry. Oh. I'm looking for Steve, Ace King Offsuit Jerk.
Oh. It's me. Salty Claws.
Uh-huh.
In the 21st century with this new headset.
Yeah, I didn't know Salty Claws. You know, that actually, it's funny because it kind of looks like Steve's headset. Now you mention it.
I had to borrow it. Salty has fallen on some hard times.
Mm-hmm.
What's he going to do about that?
Salty bet the farm on knee this weekend.
How'd that go for you, pal?
As you can see from my abundantly full workshop, not well.
Oh, no. Tonight on the show, we're going to talk about some Tekken. I don't know if you guys heard of that game and had its, basically its Capcom Cup, if you will, over the weekend. Don't let them hear you call it that, though. We'll be talking about that. We're talking about game reveals, more Tekken reveals. We're talking about trailers, talking about characters. We're even going to have a guest that is one of the best Tekken players on the planet, Cuddlecore. We're very excited to interview her. She is Salty. Do you know where she is currently located?
She's in the Netherlands.
Okay. Netherlands, interesting. All right. Salty, I understand that you're upset because you bet the farm on knee. However, I need you to bring some enthusiasm to the show starting now. Change it around. Turn that frown upside down, Salty. Because we're giving away, and nothing is more joyful than the act of giving. Can you get on board with me, Salty?
I mean, I've lost everything else. I might as well give away my last copy of Soul Calibur 6.
Go on.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
Is there no separation between your mustache and your beard? Is it all just one solid piece of hair?
You're off the list.
I'm not in the running to get Salty's last present.
No.
Damn, dude.
So we'll be giving away Soul Calibur 6 joyfully, gleefully, happily. We'll be giving it away. We'll have to rely on John, Mike, and myself to bring the happiness. But in the meantime, why don't we get to... Well, I'll let you just take it, Salty. Do you want to talk about anything? I mean, you're wearing the damn... I mean... You're salty.
I'm glad my pain brings you pleasure.
Salty, get on with it, pal. Or I'm going to kick you off this damn stream. We'll see you next year.
All right. We'll see you next year. Yeah. Merry Christmas.
I feel like we need a recap. I don't know about you.
I think we need a recap, too, but that's weird that Steve wasn't there to give it, and Salty Claws didn't look like he was willing to recap anything.
So, I mean, I was thrown off. My energy was thrown off by Salty Claws, but I did also want to note that we're going to have a badass breakdown. We promised people that we were going to break down Red Bull Kumite like a month ago. We never did. Tonight we are. You're going to hit us just a teaser here. What's the clip that we'll, or what's the match we're breaking down?
So as you said, we promised we're going to watch this. I'm going to talk about the grand finals, which was Fujimura, who I think is one of a lot of people's, you know, main picks to win the Capcom Cup, versus Problem X, who would be another person high on the list. So mm-hmm. this is a matchup we could easily see again. And so watching what happened just a month ago could be a precursor to maybe Problem X trying to switch characters, maybe him learning something new, but we're going to see why Abigail did not work out versus Ibuki.
Yeah, and, you know, spoiler alert, we know who won, but does Ibuki officially blow up Abigail?
I guess you'll see in a little bit.
We're excited about that. All right, Steve, would you please... Also, welcome to the show, Steve, Ace King Opposite Jerk. Would you please hit us with a recap?
Yeah, there was only one event that really mattered, the one that the entire FGC was focused on this weekend, and that was week 5 of the Gfinity Elite Series. The Street Fighter competition regular season wound down with XL getting another win over Reason Gaming, Vitality picking up a critical 4-1 win over Envy to round out Group A. Group B had a couple of nail biters, but Fnatic and Nordavin pulled out the victories in the end. If we look at the final standings, we see that XL and Nordavin both won their groups. The numbers on Group B are backwards. Nordavin did win. Fnatic finished second. Hashtag won the three-way tiebreaker for that third-place spot, so they will advance to the playoffs. They play Vitality this Saturday. Method plays Fnatic. And then XL and Nordavin jump in at the semifinals, and then the champion will be crowned this coming Saturday. So
does that mean Gfinity is coming to a close, or we're just going to finish the season and then we'll be back for next year most likely?
I would assume there's going to be a fifth season. It has done fairly well in the UK, so I don't see why there wouldn't be a number 5. But again, I don't know their inner workings or what sort of deal they have.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Steve, what's Gfinity again?
Gfinity is a team-based competition in the UK. They recently expanded to Australia as well, but there's three different competitions going on. There's FIFA, Street Fighter, and Rocket League. Each game will have its own champion, and then there will be an overall team championship crowned based on the results of each of those three games combined.
Hey, Steve. So,
yes.
You're my champion.
Aw, that gets me right here, mm-hmm. right here, in the left nipple.
Oddly specific. Okay. What else we got? Is that the only recap? Nothing else happened over the weekend?
Well, there was one other event you might have heard of. I think we're going to be talking about that a lot of the show, so I don't have to include that in the recap mm-hmm. just yet.
So then you have here on the run of show, quote, in all caps, all the Tekken shit. Is this how you talk about where you get your bread buttered? These are the people that pay the bills for you.
This is basically how Salty Claus was talking this morning, too, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah,
hey, what's going on with that? I only use profanity when Salty Claus isn't watching, which is always.
So it means that you're out of the running? Is that what you're telling me?
I'm out of the running for getting that copy of Soul Calibur.
It was one hell of a weekend for Tekken. We had not only an incredible Last Chance qualifier, but also an incredible Tekken World Tour Grand Finals and Championships. There was also, of course, trailers that dropped, character reveals. Yeah, I mean, everybody was wondering, even Steve, who he's got insider info, even he was like, man, I really hope there's Julia in here so people shut the hell up about it. And boom, Julia. Then one thing that I was actually really interested in, and I'm sure a lot of others were interested in, was seeing what does Negan, how do you pronounce his name? Negan? What does he look like in the game? What does he play like in the game? And man, we got that, plus a whole lot more. So why don't we kick things off by talking about Street Fighter V. Do you want to go to these clips here? Nah, just kidding, just kidding. Tekken World Tour had a Last Chance qualifier, which was pretty exciting. Had a lot of great moments. In fact, our guest was part of it, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes.
And Cuddlecore. Steve, where should we start?
Well, I mean, it makes sense to start with the last chance qualifier because that was the how the weekend kicked off. So you had this massive, massive tournament with over 300 entrants, all fighting for that one spot in top eight. So it was just absolutely nuts. Probably the most insane set from the entire thing was Pecos versus Dimebag. You had, we've got a clip of it, the triple perfect, the God round, or the God game, where Pecos got the first game, and then Dimebag just answered back with a perfect, then another perfect, then another perfect.
That's what I'm talking
about. It was all the golden letters you could ever ask for. And then the final round of the final game came down to a slow-mo almost trade that Dimebag won in the final round. There was insanity throughout the entire weekend, but this was probably the most insane of the insanity. It was just absolutely ridiculous.
Is Tekken the most hype fighting game to watch right now?
Dang.
I think it is. You know, I really feel that what the game nailed is the presentation.
You know, what do you mean by that?
The slow-mo.
The slow-mo alone does not make
sparks.
Yeah.
It enhances. It doesn't make it. You know, you have to have good gameplay. But what the slow-mo does, it just enhances those moments where it there's already tension there, and it builds that tension up to a peak. Right there with that slow-mo.
People are saying that Tekken is the Street Fighter 4 of Tekkens.
I think one person's saying that.
No.
Well, maybe he's saying that. I don't know.
Not as a Tekken player. I can sit down. I mean, I've played a handful of Tekken, but I don't take it seriously or play it on the regular. But if I'm watching a Tekken stream, I'm still getting much more invested than, say, if I'm watching a Dragon Ball FighterZ or virtually any other game. Even Street Fighter V, I can appreciate the nuances of it a lot more. But as, like, I mean, obviously I'm not, like, just someone off the street. I can appreciate fighting games. But I think even just if you grab anyone off the street and you show them Street Fighter and Tekken and FighterZ and all these, you know, fighting games that are on right now, Tekken is, like, far and away the most entertaining and the most captivating, but it's hard to put your finger on exactly why.
I think there's a couple reasons. I think part of it is that it is three-dimensional and the characters are larger on the screen, and so it's easier to pick up exactly what's going on. For the most part, it's pretty straightforward who's getting hit, who's getting comboed, why something worked. It's mostly a high versus low kind of situation. And then I think another smaller, more controversial reason is that I think people have less idea what's going on. I certainly do. And so situations that you might be like, oh, that's fucking stupid that works in Street Fighter, you don't have that in Tekken. You're like, oh, that's sick. That worked, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think a little bit of it is it's new and it's not jaded and it's kind of in a period where everyone wants it to do well and succeed. So, like, people watch it for that way. And it's certainly very exciting. I watched a Tekken World Tour and I enjoyed it, so.
Yeah, it was pretty hype.
It's been awesome.
How much of that has to do with the commentary team and the four-man commentary presentation? And, I mean, that was pretty slick. And there was also some drama. That was a fun moment. People were saying that that's like an esports skit where Rip and
Reinhardt
were going at each other and calling each other out for their records
and
whatnot.
What did he say? One more tournaments than you've entered or something like that?
Yeah, something like
one
that.
More tournaments than you'll ever enter. The man just got ethered on stream. He just body bagged. But the chemistry that all of those guys had, because you had Tasty Steve on there as well. You had Spag. You had Mark Mann and Eris, and they were just mixing and matching throughout the weekend, and it just worked really, really well. I didn't think it would work. We saw something similar at Red Bull Conquest, the finals there, where you had like that multi-person setup. If you get the chemistry right, it just makes everything so much better. And two events, they really nailed the chemistry.
Yeah, man, it was a lot of fun to watch. It's hard to capture that, but it's exciting too, right? Because you need, even if it's, you could say, well, it's not my game if you're not a Tekken guy, but you still should be happy to see that kind of reaction and energy and emotion at a fighting game event.
Yeah. And we can take a look at the results of that too, because that came down, that was a nuts tournament. Bit of a surprise. Double, the person I thought would win, finished second to Gerlanda, who came up through the loser's bracket, actually lost to Double earlier, and then got the double win in the run back. So he was the person who got the final spot in the Tekken World Tour Finals. Dimeback third, Cuddlecore our guest in fourth. You had a lot of great international representation. You had six different countries in top eight. You had 12 different countries in top 32 of this thing. So you had a pretty balanced representation between Asia, Europe, and the Americas. Well, I guess the United States, because unfortunately, Abel Del Maestro did not make it out into top 32.
Steve, aren't you the guy that always talks shit that Europe, every European country goes under the banner of Europe? And here we have an Italian player. You're not you're not giving credit for being from Italy.
Well, yeah. Well, what I'm saying is, like, when it comes down to the Tekken scene in Europe, it seems like Italy and France are the two strongest. So, but even still, when Gerlanda won, that entire arena went nuts. You know, it's sort of like my brother before my cousin, but my cousin before my neighbor sort of thing.
One thing I thought was pretty cool about this tournament was, I mean, Tekken has so many rounds. It's three rounds per thing, and they were playing 3 out of 5s, and the rounds are pretty quick. And so you got to see player cam in between almost every round. And I remember in the grand finals, you saw Double go from, like, you know, the epitome, like, so stoic into just, like, you know, like, kind of pounding his stick and getting really upset after every consecutive loss, and Gerlanda getting more and more hype. So I thought seeing the two of them and their converse emotions, like, really played into the last set, and I thought it was a lot of fun for that reason.
And you had that great visual, too, afterwards, where you had all the Italian players coming up and tossing Gerlanda into the air in celebration, and then you cut back to Double, who's fighting off tears. You know, that part sucks to see, but just seeing how much this set and this – winning this means to these players, I think, shows how big of a deal that this entire tournament is and has become over the last, you know, few years, dating back to when it was the King of the Iron Fist.
Hey, Steve, anybody who didn't watch the Last Chance qualifier, any matches or moments that they should go back and find on YouTube and watch, other than the Triple Perfect, which we already showed?
Double versus Pekos was insane set. The grand final between Gerlanda and Double, or Dimeback versus Pekos, excuse me, earlier. But Double versus Gerlanda was a great set. You can almost pick 5 or 6, 7 different sets from that entire tournament and just watch some great Tekken going. You know, and that continued into Sunday as well.
We have a Tekken head here in the studio. He was streaming just yesterday with Marduki and didn't get to Armor King. Any moments for you from the Last Chance qualifier, Elon?
Definitely my favorite moment was the Dimeback Pekos saga with the God match, which is just Triple Perfect, which we watched a little earlier, and then the way it all culminated, it was pretty dope. But another, not necessarily a match, but something I really did enjoy was the French representation. Not just in players, but in people watching was amazing. Like, they had rehearsed chants and shit. It was pretty dope. I really enjoyed seeing that.
It did seem like the venue itself looked cool, like the theater style.
Yeah, and it looked packed.
It looked packed, yeah. That's great to see. All right, anything else you guys want to say about the Last Chance qualifier? Other than the fact that it's a cool format that is inherently
dramatic. No, I
like
the Last Chance qualifier. It was good.
Right on. The finals format. Steve, you want to tee us off here? What was the finals format for anybody who didn't watch?
So, if you didn't watch, the 20 players who made it got to go into groups. The top four were put into separate groups. Their identities were hidden until everybody else picked. Then everyone else from 5 down to 20 went up in order and they picked which group they wanted to be in. So you had moments where people wanted a particular set, or they picked a particular group to either avoid a player or they wanted another shot. Like I forgot who it was, said, I want Tissuemon. Said, I want revenge, and he picked JDCR's group, even though he was only, like, the third person to pick. So that was pretty good. And then they played a round robin where, you know, the top two advanced into the top eight. Group winner would be on the winner's side. Runner-up would be on the loser's side. And we have the results for that. Group A, you had Rangchu. That in a group that came down to the wire, actually, you had Rangchu, Chanel, and Anakin all tied heading into the final round of matches. But Rangchu pulled out his win over Anakin to advance. Chanel got his win to advance. That ended up being pretty significant, as we would see later on. Group B was all about Jimmy J. He dominated that one. One match he lost was when he was pretty much qualified anyway. John Ding versus Lohai was a pretty good set. That determined who would go on, and it was John Ding who took it over the Evo champion. Group C had Kudans making the only undefeated run of the tournament in the group stage. He went 4-0. You had a three-way tie between Joey Fury, JDCR, and Tissuemon, all at 2-2. Joey Fury won the tiebreak. We'll come back to that a little later. And then Group D, Nee, actually needed a win in his last set to make it out of the group. He won the group, but it was by the slimmest of margins. Nobi finishing second. Girlanda, after the last chance qualifier run, finishing third in his group with a 2-2 record.
I have to say, for me, I thought this was the weakest part of the tournament. I thought I was much more entertained by the last chance qualifier and by the finals bracket. I think there were some issues that went on in the group stages. Obviously, the tiebreaker issue was big. And I think the idea of the group stages, where you have these stories that emerge within the groups and you have situations that need to happen, it's kind of lost when it all happens in the span of an hour. You know, instead of thinking, oh, I've got to do this and beat this guy and the announcer's getting to talk about what matches matter. Instead, it's just you watch the same five characters and the same five guys play each other, and I think it's boring comparatively in terms of seeing a bigger variety of players, and it also kind of, the strategy of it gets lost and it gets very confusing, and obviously it ended up almost, you know, ending in catastrophe. So I think if they're going to return to group stages, they're going to have to figure out something different. But, I mean, Tekken World Tour is still great, but I just didn't like the groups.
Mike alluded to it. Steve, what was that controversy?
Well, there was a three-way tie, like I mentioned, between JDCR, Tissuemon, and Joey Fury. If we look at we actually have the tiebreaker rules that we can show on screen, basically saying that if there's a tie, the first tiebreaker is game differential between the players, then total games won, and then a one-game tiebreak game to be played between whoever's tied if neither of the first two worked out. What happened was JDCR and, you know, in the tie, they looked at game differential. They said JD's, for whatever reason, they either misdid the math or misread how the tiebreaker worked, because JDCR and Joey were considered tied in that regard. Then they went to games one, which was also tied. So they had the two play a single game tiebreak, and JDCR won that. And then afterwards, a bunch of people reached out to them trying to figure out what was going on, and they realized that they shouldn't have been tied in the first place. Joey Fury was at zero game differential. JDCR was at -1, so it should have never gone to the tiebreaker. After the conclusion of the last group, they came on and said, hey, the tiebreaker rule wasn't followed properly. Joey Fury should have advanced, and he will advance. So JDCR thought he had He won the game, thought he had advanced, ended up being eliminated.
Was there any reaction from JDCR afterwards?
He said it was a tough situation, but he understood. He said that on Twitter after the event concluded. They made mention of him being off stream crying. I wasn't able to verify that, but I mean, it sucks for him. It sucks for Joey as well, because you can see he, in his top eight match, he wasn't really feeling himself the way he normally does. He was getting not so much in the venue, but you know, in Twitch chat on social media, he was being made out as the villain for something that, you know, it's not his fault. He should have advanced, you know, and yet everyone was like, looking at him like, oh, you took JDCR spot.
Well, that's silly. So, I mean, yeah, screw that. Yeah, that's water off a duck's back. It has to be, because it's not founded in anything. But that is a sticky situation, and maybe it's like, well, keep this kind of grounded, because otherwise it's just too amazing of an event, and we can't have those quite yet. But it does kind of suck. And you know, having played in a handful of tournaments and such, you don't see it, obviously, because it's something that kind of just happens out there in the ether. But the players' fortitude and mental stability to keep going through all of this, just with the matches alone, is very difficult. And the smallest thing can really shake you, especially if you have to be going and playing it over and over and over again, round robin formats into the next top eight and all that kind of stuff. So hats off to these guys for even going through this. And I am, I guess I'm not surprised, especially since we're talking JDCR, who's never given us any kind of indication that he's like, you know, a sore loser or you know, kind of negative on social media or anything like that. But it would have been interesting to see if that kind of thing happened to maybe a louder player. But unfortunate through and through, and it sucks. But otherwise, a great event, you know.
The big thing to note about this mess up to me is that, unlike, you know, the situations where we saw in Smash where they played on the wrong rules and played a full set, this was a situation where the result had already happened. So while it sucked for JDCR, it didn't change anything. Like, it didn't change the match they played. It didn't change the way the tournament would have gone. The fact of the matter is they basically ended up playing a show match for no reason afterwards, but the result would have been the same whether they had gotten the ruling right or wrong. So yeah, it was like 100% something that had to happen. Like, it had to be that Joey advanced, or they would have, you know, messed up with the integrity of the whole tournament. Mm-hmm. So you can't be mad at Joey for this. Like, you can't. Like, he didn't do anything.
No, that's silly.
Yeah, I hope that, you know, I personally prefer head-to-head as a tiebreaker first.
It's more satisfying.
I hope that gets changed next year, but I prefer the group format. Well, I don't necessarily prefer it. I like it for this event. I feel like you have, you know, in a bracket, if you're given one bad matchup, that puts you at such a huge disadvantage. Here, at least you have to go through, you have four chances to prove that you should advance, essentially.
So, yeah, absolutely. This is a more refined sampling of like who's the best, at least on this particular day, right? It's more consistent
in some ways.
More
yeah. In some ways, you only get certain matchups, and you can pick to favor, and et cetera, et cetera. And there's like, is going last actually bad, or is it good? You know, it's very interesting. And I think if you have five people in the group, you can't make the tiebreaker game differential, because there's too many garbage games at the end. There just are. There's like, when you're on the fifth match, some guy's already, you know, 3-0, or fourth match, some guy's already 3-0 or 2-1, and other people are 1-2, and they don't care about that last match. And now suddenly that game differential that means nothing to them means everything to the people below them. So I really think it has to be head-to-head if you're going to have that many people in a group. And I think it's a massive oversight, to be honest.
The one worry I have, you know, that plays into it a little bit. And this didn't happen as far as I could see. But when you, especially when you have odd numbered of people in the groups, if you don't play those final matches simultaneously, you have that situation where one participant doesn't care, you know, and they know exactly what result they need to advance or to let their opponent advance. So I hope that if, you know, any tournament that uses a group stage, if it's possible, let's have those final matches played simultaneously, just to make sure that there's no chance of anything happening that could, impugn upon the sanctity of the competition.
All right, guys, before we wrap up the Tekken discussion or go over some other Tekken topics, lightning round. Just give me your answer and move on for different formats for Pro Tour Finals. Round robin, block or grab?
I block. I don't like it.
Steve, block or grab on round robin for Pro Tour Finals? This is courtesy of Blue561. He's asking.
I grab. I think different events have different goals, and I like it for this event.
John, block or grab on a round robin format for Pro Tour Finals?
I'm going to grab with the asterisks of maybe some things could be tidied up a bit, or maybe it's like from a match or an event to event, kind of thing. But I'll grab overall.
And the other option here for block or grab is double elimination.
I would prefer it to this, so I guess I would grab.
Steve, block or grab, double elim.
I grab. I like both. You know, Capcom Cup isn't better than Tekken World Tour Finals because of this. The reverse is true. So they're both great.
John?
It's tried and true. It's fine. I wouldn't block it.
Okay. Moving on then.
I agree, though. I do think that groups has a place, and I think it could work, but I think it worked better for something like E-League and for stuff like the World Cup where you have more time. And where better thought out.
If you incentivize like not getting last or something like that, then you can still minimize the amount.
How'd they seed the top eight?
Well, top eight,
top two players in each group, right?
All the people who won the group came out on winner side. All the people who finished runner up came out on loser side.
Oh, really?
And then there was prize differential between, 9th, 13th, and 17th, or 3rd, 4th, and 5th in the group. So there was some sort of financial incentive.
Is there anything else to say about the finals and results for the actual championship?
The Bears.
We could take a look at how the top eight shook out. And the name up top, not the name I predicted. I predicted Kudans would win, but as my prediction always do, finished second. Rang Chu came up through the loser's bracket and did it with Panda.
That's so sick.
Who is like on event hubs, he's like 35th out of 41. Some people consider Panda bottom three. It was just ridiculous. Just to see this low tier character beat so many good players and not just, not just have a good run. Handled Kudans, handled me, handled Chanel. It was impressive to watch.
I hear over and over again, and again, I'm not, as immersed into the Tekken scene as perhaps like the Street Fighter scene, but I keep hearing that this game, you can win with anybody or almost anybody. And
I think
to
that's
a degree,
bullshit,
that's not,
but
you don't think that's
we'll
the case.
Going.
But then look who just won the Super Bowl of Tekken.
A fucking Panda.
It did happen. I think this kind of stuff happens in other games, though. And I think you still had like five jacks and, 20 of the characters were absent. And there was way more overlaps than there were not. So, and I think that's been pretty consistent. So I don't know if I've ever believed that. You see a lot of Mishimas. You saw a lot of Dragunov. But it is cool that Panda won. But I don't believe that anyone can win Tekken 3.
Yeah, I don't know for sure, but I hear that continue to pop up, and not just because Panda won this event. I hear that, I've been hearing it for months and years, that this game, it really more comes down to the player's personal ability and not so much. Everyone on the tier list is more or less viable. Steve, maybe you can.
I'm not good enough or know enough about the game to really judge. I'm just saying that based on empirical data, I don't think it's shown that. But this does help. I won't lie about that.
I mean, we did see something like 11 different characters in top eight. You had a couple people rock Devilgen. You had Dragunov. You had Jack Seven. But you also had Brian. You had Eddie make some appearances. You had Lily, Alisa, Chloe. Yeah, you had a good amount of variety there, even with some people who had a couple of the same characters in their pocket. Mm-hmm.
All right, guys. Panda, awesome, very cute.
Panda.
Let's talk about some of the reveals. So I guess this counts as a reveal. Tekken 7 hit 1.6 million in sales. How long did it take other franchises in this same amount of time to hit 3.6? Anybody know?
I don't have the numbers, but I mean, just in general, fighting games aren't selling quite as quickly as they have in certain points in history. So it's a game that continues to do well, and it's good to see that they're getting some sort of financial reward, because that means it's more likely that they're going to continue support for it.
I guess we can wait till we talk about Negan here, but there was a lot of I guess the official Walking Dead Twitter account retweeted that trailer, and we'll get to that in a sec. But this is 3.6 million units sold, right? Clearly that's what you meant right here? Okay.
Yep.
So then the other big reveal was they put out a trailers, plural, that revealed that Marduk, Armor King, and Julia were the remaining characters. And not only that, that Marduk and Armor King were already available the next day. You can play them. There's Marduk right here with a gnarly beard. He always had a beard, right?
Craig Marduk.
Yeah. Can't remember.
No, I don't think so. I think he just got a beard.
Yeah, that's like the thing to do and do the sequel of the game.
Give him a beard.
I think they got most of the characters I heard people crying about. It was Anna Williams, it was Julia, it was Marduk, and they got them all. So,
Marduk looks awesome.
Seems like they've fine. And Harada's done a good job of acting like he wasn't going to give anyone they want and then still giving them what they wanted.
Don't ask me for
which
shit.
Which I think is the best way to go about things, because it sets no expectations and you get all the glory out of it. So, if you're willing to keep up the poker face for that long, it pays off in spades. And I think Harada did that.
Hit me with that Armor King trailer, would you? So,
did they not transition from him kicking King's ass to into Armor King?
Well, you might be fooled into thinking that because of how slick Ilan's edit was right now, live and in color. Here is Armor King.
Armor King's cool.
He looks cool, but I remember. Okay, I've never been like a diehard Tekken guy, but I had it on the PlayStation back in the day, and I was like, "What's the deal with Armor King? Like, who gives a shit? I already have King."
So I mean, he's King's mom.
So, okay, now I get it. So since he's King's mom, that's pretty cool. That's pretty legit, having King's mom on there. Yeah, a lot of people want...
And Julia's King's mom, too.
Armor King, two moms. That's very progressive. But I guess JDCR is like a Armor King main or something like that, Steve?
He was a very happy man. There were quite a few happy people after this, because, like, at the end of this trailer, you also had a the reveal of Julia coming back, which is, oh, thank God, because I am so tired of hearing about I miss Julia, I want Julia, bring Julia back.
Okay, but let's talk about Julia in this trailer here for a second. What the hell's going on? She's a Twitch streamer now or something? Or?
She's the easiest cosplay ever.
Yeah.
Everybody,
13 seconds after this trailer popped up, every cosplayer ever posted their own Julia, because, oh, hey, I'm wearing that. Cool, and I can take a selfie. Awesome. Bam. Julia cosplay immediately.
But she's always been like an environmental activist or some shit, and now she like streams it.
Yeah,
being an activist for the environment. She's Ocasio-Cortez.
She's all about fighting deforestation. So she's using her reach apparently to get that money.
That's pretty
to
neat.
Get, to save the forest. Hopefully, it doesn't get audited.
Mash like and sub on her. I'm a fan of Julia because she's about- T-Hawk. So anyway, John, what do you want to talk about?
I want to talk about Negan, because I've been kind of studying him as a character for like the last year or so, and then he jumps into Tekken, and there's like mixed response to it, and I kind of want to talk about it. So first and foremost, Negan is a very popular, you know, pop culture character right now, and I remember when he first rose to prominence. There's probably going to be some spoilers for Walking Dead, so just, you know, tune out if that's for you, but this scene at the end of like two seasons ago or whatever it was, he came out, and I remember us talking about it on an Event Pubs call, saying that would be such a sick character for Mortal Kombat, because he has a bat wrapped with barbed wire, and his first appearance here is pretty physical. There's and violent, because he ends up killing two characters, right, just by bashing their heads in. Here's the thing, it's weird a little bit for Tekken, but it's okay, because he's everybody knows who he is. Everyone goes, man, I know that character from the TV. I'd like to play it. And here I am, you know, like breaking it down and thinking about it from all these different angles. And is this a good call or not? But there's very much a part of me that goes, man, I saw that character on the TV. I want to play him. So they announce him. Everyone's kind of like, well, maybe that'll work. Then we get to this, where we actually see a pretty smart recreation of his most famous scene. But of course, instead of the Walking Dead cast, you have the Tekken characters, and they actually get up and fight him, which is nice. The thing about Negan, he's actually not a very physical character. If you've watched the show, he's been around for like, what, 2.5 seasons or so. And he's only had like maybe 2.5 physical altercations or so. And that's like 17 episode season. So he's much more about his presence, the way he runs things, his charisma, his delivery of lines and such. And they do try to capture that here. It's one thing to have Jeffrey Dean Morgan deliver a pretty amazing acting performance, and a whole other thing to try to get, you know, in a video game trailer, recreate his flow of speech. That's actually fairly easy. But then the way he moves around, the way he delivers his lines, the way he like does that little like pump backwards when he's talking to emphasize certain things. And they tried it in here, and I heard a lot of people, I don't remember what each of you said, like in our chat, for instance. I think it was Mike that said it was kind of a boring or not, it didn't really do it for you reveal.
Classic.
And the same kind of thing happened in like the Event Hub's chat, where a lot of people were like, no, it was just boring. I didn't get it. I don't really know. And I think that is just because a lot of people are like, it doesn't quite translate. The performance and the acting performance translating into a video game, they tried really hard. They did a decent job, but like the pauses and the drama of it all, maybe it didn't quite translate. Plus the stakes aren't as high because these guys are actually getting up and fighting him, and there's no actual death in Tekken. But all that said, I think that this was a very, very smart move by Bandai, because like I said before, everyone's going to recognize there are going to be more than a few people that get this game or download this character just because they like the character. And it you know, it further branches out into the bigger, wider world, which is something that, you know, we want to do as esports fighting games to help grow our scene and everything. And so I think that for anyone that's wondering whether or not this was a good call, yeah, 7 out of 10. It was a good call, in my opinion.
Mike, what did you think?
I thought it was kind of a lazy trailer. I thought it kind of looked like it was made in Gary's mod. It was like there's like no animation at several points. His lines are pretty poorly
synced up with his lips.
Yeah. As John said, you know, I didn't know much about the show, but what John said makes perfect sense because his fighting style seems very contrived. It's like, oh, dude with bat swings. And it's obvious that he didn't fight in the show, because if he did, they would have done something more clever, because I think the way he fights looks super boring, to be honest. Like, it's like occasionally like he rakes you with the little barbed wire. I don't know. It just swing. There's nothing really there to me. So well, I think it's cool to have him in the game. And his obviously the voice acting is fantastic. Like, there's no qualms there. And people are going to like it, so I can't hate that hard. But, I mean, I wasn't impressed.
Right. As a non-physical character, his power comes in from the fact that he is almost omnipresent. In the show, every one of his followers, they all say, I am Negan. And the idea is that you never know if Negan is actually watching and monitoring you or not. So you have to play by his rules, lest you be, you know, murdered or killed or whatever. And so, but he himself very rarely exerts any physical power or anything like that. He just has his lackeys do it for him, and he uses his aura and his presence to get the job done otherwise. So, yeah, maybe not the best, but again, everything else considered, and the fact that people aren't going to think that far into it, and they're just going to, I want to use Negan's back. Well, I'm sorry, Lucille. I think it's really going to work.
So, go ahead.
I'm sort of back and forth on the trailer because, you know, I'm not a huge Walking Dead person.
Same.
The animation of Negan looks stiff and it doesn't look finished. It makes him look really, really unathletic compared to the rest of the cast. But like you were saying, it kind of works because you just have a guy who's got this bat and he's just swinging for the fences. I will take issue with you calling the trailer lazy because of how many references they were able to get in to the rest of the show. There is a video. I forget his username, and I apologize.
We'll link it in the chat here in a bit.
But it's on Event Hubs right now, where you compare the trailer that they just launched to the scenes that they drew it from. And it is just so well done, especially when you compare the situation of the characters and how they're related to each other to the characters they replaced. It just, there was a lot of care put into at least that aspect of it.
So, all right, guys, we're gonna move on because our boy here is on a time crunch and we want to get to his breakdown. Fast Negan blocker grab.
I mean, overall, I've got a grab on the character.
Steve, blocker grab. Negan,
grab.
Play with us at home, by the way. John, blocker grab.
Grabberoni.
It worked. I don't love it, but it worked.
Grabs all around. We got some blocks in the chat. All right, guys. Those characters will be available soon. You should go ahead and play them. Before we transition to talk about Capcom Cup and visas and whatnot, we're going to have a breakdown. Tell us what match this is, where it was from, bring it back to the top of our mind, or put us back in the spot of where this is coming from. All right,
we're doing this match, even though it's a little old, because we promised we would, and people remembered in the chat. This is Fujimura versus Problem X from Red Bull Kumite about a month ago. This was the grand finals, and both of these players are top seeds in the Capcom Cup. So it's very, very possible these guys could meet again down the line. Notably, Problem X went with Abigail in this matchup. He switched to Bison the last game and got rolled over. But it's clear that Abigail was who he wanted to pick versus Fujimura.
For all the good it did him. So go ahead and get us going here.
So if you just go to this clip, basically the first part of what I'm going to be showing is a series of short clips that shows the range Ibuki can play at, which is if you see... This is round start, and this range is Ibuki's advantage. And essentially, if she can hold this the whole match, she's going to win. And we'll show you a few examples why. The first one you see, it's right outside the regular V-skill range and right inside the held V-skill range. And the first option Problem X tries to escape this constant V-skill meter building trap is the run to armor through it. Gets crush countered on reaction, no problem. Combo afterwards. And so next clip, we're going to see him playing about the same range. Here, he's backed up after a block string, and now he's just doing all of these V skills. Last one hits, and if you notice, he's got V trigger now. And look at his health, only like a quarter down. So if you keep going, V trigger. Third clip, same deal. If you pause, you know, it's paused different. Okay, go back to the beginning. He's playing at that same range here, round start type range. Abigail tries to jump in, easy reaction with the stand heavy kick. Next clip. Here again. I'm just going through the options slowly. That one seemed to have lagged. Do you want to start at the beginning? Sure. Just move through a little click. No, the very beginning.
That is the beginning of it, pal.
Okay, well, this one's going quickly on the screen for me. But anyhow, keep it going. He whiff punishes a standing fierce with a V-trigger, same type deal. And then last one. Oh, yeah. Here we're going to see, finally, he's able to confirm in this range. He can be proactive instead, and he can harass with kunai, and those on hit will confirm. And then the big deal is if you go to the clip where they're all layered on top of each other, basically what you can see is all of these start at the exact same range. And Fujimura, every single round of every single match, held this range, and then if you play them frame by frame, you're going to see that basically what happens is no matter what option Problem X chooses, there's an easy reaction from Fujimura to beat it. The only real way for Problem X to escape the situation is to either jump when Fujimura is trying to do something proactive, like throw a kunai, which is a total guess, or for him to hope he doesn't react. But outside of that, because Ibuki has the walk speed advantage, and because she's winning at that range already and continuously getting V-trigger the whole time and chipping Abigail down, he has to do something random to get out. And basically, all of them are very, very low probability options.
Is that a 7-3 matchup if you play it like this? Because I think these are two of the absolute best in the world, and it felt like Problem X just was shut down.
I think it's quite bad. I don't know if it's 7-3, but that combined with a few of the things I'm going to show next, and, you know, EX Air Kunai stopping all of Abigail's anti-airs, I really think there's very little he can do outside, and that's how a lot of grappler matchups go, right? Theoretically, on paper, the grappler shouldn't be able to escape. But I think what's unique about this is that it's so easy for Ibuki to consistently do these options. It's not something where, like, oh, if he doesn't react to a 20-frame dash, you know, he loses. It's like, if he doesn't anti-air a 50-frame jump in, he loses. It's very different. So I'll show a couple more quick clips.
All right, so here we go. This one you were just going to talk over, right?
Right, and so this one's basically Another key to beating grapplers is to make sure that you're doing the safest, highest reward option. So here, at the beginning of the clip, we don't see it, but if you freeze right at the beginning, Problem X has just dashed in to go for a command grab. So now if you pause right here, usually what people want to do is neutral jump. And the reason you want a neutral jump is because if they command grab, you're going to be able to punish with a full combo. But the issue with that is if he instead, say, normal grabbed, he could punish you for neutral jumping. Fujimura instead goes for the back jump. And if you play the clip, he uses a really interesting technique of throwing the held kunai to get a max damage punish versus that, which is pretty rare to see. And in a similar vein, you see the same type of deal here. He's in a block string. He sees this unblockable. He jumps backwards, and he's able to get the punish with the V-trigger instead. And so what he's shown is that Ibuki's able to get a lot of damage while choosing a safe option like jumping backwards, which Abigail's very difficult time beating, essentially. And I think there's one more clip here, which is just one more situation showing a lot of awareness. You don't see this very often, but he dashes up and grabs Abigail as soon as he starts charging the unblockable. And a lot of these fake kind of I'm going to block string into the unblockable situations, you can do that.
Now, is this the matchup? How much of it is the matchup? How much of it is Fujimura and his incredible reactions?
What this shows to me is something that you haven't seen in a long time, which is the weaknesses of grapplers actually coming to the forefront, which is that the matchup is hard, and usually you make up for hard grappler matchups by being stupid and doing a lot of damage and winning in two hits, and Fujimura refused to let that happen. And actually, every match he lost was because that happened. Every round he lost was a comeback, essentially. But when he was able to hold control, which he was because he's so consistent and so optimized, he just shut him down completely.
Okay. Well, that pretty much wraps up our analysis. Dunk analysis, I think they're coining here. Hashtag dunk analysis. We're going to move on to Douglas. If I'm not mistaken, and I know you at home, you're going to be very upset. Duncan has to leave.
Sorry, boys.
Yeah, man. What are you, in the middle of finals here?
Yep, something like that.
Right on, homie. So we're going to say bye to Danka. Bye, Danka. Hasta luego. And bye. We're going to continue on discussing some topics. And then, of course, don't leave. We have Cuddlecore, an interview with Cuddlecore. Uh-oh. We got two Steves here.
You're sandwiched between two of me.
Yeah, I mean, this is my dream come true, really, if you think about it.
Oh, God.
All right, guys. So moving on. Steve, I'm sorry, John, are you following the situation here with Crossover?
Yeah, I've been looking at Capcom Fighter's Twitter to see what's going on.
Yeah.
To see if anything updates. And I haven't seen anything as of late, but I haven't checked in like 5 minutes. So give me a second.
Okay. Steve, why don't you catch us up on what's going on with Crossover?
Well, today Crossover took to Twitter and announced that he was unfortunately not going to be able to compete in Capcom Cup. He said, quote, "It saddens me to say that I won't be able to make it to Capcom Cup due to the embassy in DR not approving my visa. I'm in tears now and in so much pain. I worked hard all these years to get this opportunity, and this happened. I'm grateful for the friends I have. See you in 2020. And then Capcom, they came back and responded saying, quote, "We're aware of the situation, the Crossover situation. It is our understanding that he will be attempting some kind of last appeal. We will update when we have a final decision regarding his status and who will take his place should he not be able to attend Capcom Cup." And then right before we went on the air, they tweeted out that they're currently working with Crossover for a solution to his visa issue, and that if he ends up unable to attend Capcom Cup, they'll be looking at the next eligible player based on the placements of the Latin America Regional Final Top 8.
And wait, no, so it's based on the top eight as opposed to the global leaderboards, but the next Latin American player down?
Well, Capcom has, whenever someone's been unable to attend an event, attend Capcom Cup, they have replaced them with the next person up based on how they qualified. If you remember when Knuckledoo couldn't attend Capcom Cup last year, he was replaced with he had qualified by being the champion, so they replaced him with Ricky Ortiz, the runner-up. This year we actually have a list of the results from versus fighting from this year, and you can see that after Crossover it would be Piccolo and then Doomsnake, should either of them be unable to make it, or should Crossover not be able to make it. It's unfortunate. Visas have been very tough for fighting game players to deal with. Crossover's not the first person to miss out on Capcom Cup due to visa issues. It's happened with IPS finals as well, especially with the Russian players, some of the Latin American players. Leffen had to deal with visa issues and couldn't compete in the U.S. for almost a year because of that. So it's unfortunate.
What's to say that whoever the next person, like, say that Crossover can't make it, the next guy, I mean, he might not have, or, you know, visa clearance either at this point. It's a little bit late in the game to start getting that whole process going, isn't it?
Well, I mean, he came out and said that he applied as soon as he won.
Yeah.
So, like, the next day, he went out and tried to get the visa.
That was like a month ago.
Yeah. The issue is, you know, for athletes, it's easy to show, you know, you have to show that you're providing a certain skill. And, you know, there's special exceptions for athletes and athletic competitions. Esports for by and large isn't recognized as that. A lot of visas are approved on a case by case basis. So this could be a case of one person approving it and the other person not. Same happened with Leffen when he reapplied after he got kicked out. First time he tried, he was rejected, and then he tried again and was approved. So
just got to get the right person on the right day to give you the stamp or not, huh?
Because of this nebulous position of esports in terms of, is it a sport, is it a competition, what is it,
I have to imagine that's going to get easier and easier as we go, though, right?
Sure,
because it is becoming more well known. I mean, you probably have if you work at a, you know, at a consulate or something, you probably have a nephew or a son or a cousin or somebody that plays Fortnite or whatever. The point is that it's more and more out there as a thing, and it's easier to prove, like, no, look at these videos, look at the, I don't know. But I just feel like it's more in the air.
So hopefully we do end up seeing Doomsnake in Capcom Cup. It would suck to see a player not get an opportunity because of something like this.
You mean Crossover?
What did I say?
Doomsnake.
Well, Doomsnake is apparently signed up for the last chance qualifier. So one way or another, we'll see him that weekend. Hopefully they both make it.
Yeah.
Guys, are there any other topics you wanted to hit? You have here esports, a medal event at Southeast Asia Games. What's this?
That was something that just got announced last week. The Southeast Asia Games will have esports, will be handing out medals for esports competitions. There'll be two mobile games, two console games, two PC games. One of the mobile games has been announced, Mobile Legends. The rest of the titles are to be determined. So we'll see if a fighting game gets thrown in with that.
John, are we saying bye to you right now?
I'm going to watch the rest of the show from the Stream Monster pool.
Hey, John, what are you working on in Event Hubs right now?
Oh, gosh. Looking at more Season 4 stuff and trying to get predictions going out and covering back over all that Tekken hype and such. And then, hey, Smash Ultimate's in just a few days.
Yeah, so that's on Friday.
That's really what's on our...
Yep. Are you going to play Smash, John?
Nah, not really. I'm going to write about it a little bit. That's it.
Nah, I'm not into it. You should play it, bro. It's a really fun party game.
We have someone who's going to play it, Elon.
Elon's going to play it. I'm going to play it. And we're going to try to get... Mike to play it. Donka is actually a pro level Smash player. I don't know if y'all know that, but we're gonna try to get him on playing some. Cool, John. Thank you so much as always. John Velociraptor Guerrero writes for EventHubs.com. He's also on numerous podcasts, including the Event Hubs one. Are you still doing the one with Born Free?
No, people keep asking about that. He's talking about maybe moving out to the West Coast, and if he does that, we want to get some regular streaming and podcasting and such in. So, yeah, pester him on Twitter to actually get moved out here, so we can do all that. Yeah.
Everybody go to Twitter and hit up at Born Free Tweets. I think that's his handle. And tell him that you want that podcast back and more content from him. All right, guys, or John, thank you so much. Steve, it's just you and me, buddy. Let's do a quick giveaway while we get Cuddlecore on. Oh, look what he did. So, Ilan, you want to talk to me in the meantime? What's going on, pal? Let's get rid of this.
Yeah, not to brag or anything, but I've entered one Smash tournament in my lifetime.
Yeah, and how'd you do?
And I did not go the equivalent of 0-2.
What'd you do?
I won one match, since they do they do round robins. So I won one match, and everyone else was very pissed off that I was playing Jigglypuff.
Dude, man, I hate some of the fans on Smash because of stuff like that. We're going to bring Steve back on here in a second. I mean, Salty Claws. We're going to give away a copy of Soul Calibur 6. Hope you all are excited about that. When are you going to open this raffle, Ilan? We're waiting on you, pal.
Look, I'm trying to do 8 things here. Will you give me a break? It's open. Everyone,
all right, guys.
Enter. Go.
Type in exclamation point raffle if you want in on this raffle. We're giving away. Salty Claws is giving away, not me. I don't give anything away. I'm a cheapskate. We're giving away a copy of Soul Calibur 6. You might think, why not give away a copy of Tekken, since that's such a hype game, and you can play as a panda? Well, Salty Claws didn't think that far in advance. He only bought a copy of Soul Calibur, and that's what we'll be giving away. And I probably should have mentioned that if you're not in the continental United States, don't be a jerk. It costs a lot to ship these things. But, you know, whatever. It is what it is.
I think I can hear her.
Oh, yeah. Hello, Cuttercore?
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah! Sweet!
We lost your picture, but we hear your voice.
Oh, yeah. Okay, hold on. Okay, I just had to fix some stuff. Well, I'm good. I'm here.
Cuddlecore, your name is Janelle Carter. Am I getting that right?
Yes.
Nailed it. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us all the way from Amsterdam, if I'm not mistaken, at 2 a.m., no less.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Yeah, we were super grateful you were able to make time for us. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I've never been in Amsterdam, so I've really been enjoying my time with, like, the team and my friends.
Mm-hmm. So. What kind of things are you getting into up there?
Well, we've been to a lot of different places, just, like, it's called the Dom Square, or, like, Center. We've been to some museums. I got to play with a few of the Korean players too. And so it's just been really nice trying the foods and stuff, just everything. It's been so exciting.
Yeah, I think there was some footage on Twitter of you trying out the new characters with some of the Korean players that are over there. Is that right?
Well, I got to play with JDCR. So Armor King was one of his mains. I didn't try them out because I already like have mine, but I got to experience how he plays in this game, and he made him look so good as a character, just so well-rounded. I was like, this is a completely different version of Armor King. I mean, he's very similar, but, like, he has some strengths that JDCR picked up on right away.
Right on. I can't wait to see him.
So speaking of those new characters, what are your first impressions of him and Marduk? Like, just from what you were able to pick up?
Oh, they're very strong. Like, they were... When I thought about how they were in their previous games, Tag, like in Tag 2, and then I compared them to how they are now, they are still just as strong, maybe even stronger, because it's a solo game, and I saw, like, their rage drives, their damage, and just some of the things that made them strong before, they're still here now, so it's just going to make them better.
Like, do you think, which one, if you had to pick one to be more afraid of right away, who do you think? Which way are you leaning?
Armor King.
That was a very unconvincing Armor King.
No, because I had to think about they seem very similar to me. Just some of the just grapples, maybe some of the guesses, their power damage. But I saw some cheap things on the internet with Armor King, and I was kind of convinced. Like, I thought about it, and I'm like, No, I think he's more broken, like in regards to just throw potential.
So let's go back a little bit, a couple of days, and talk about the Tekken World Tour Finals. We're curious to know how you feel about your performance there at that tournament.
I honestly, when I played, I was kind of like, okay, well, Slash Chance qualifier, don't know what to expect, but I've been training, and I know I'm prepared for this moment. This is going to be great. So I was impressed with myself because all the training I'd done through the whole year, This was the finals, and though I didn't qualify to get in with the top, like, 20 or even 19 originally, I felt like all the studying and all the questions that I asked and just reviewing videos, it all, like, it paid off. How I started from the beginning of the year to now, I see massive improvement.
Was there one match throughout the tournament that you thought, okay, this is the best, this is the best I've played?
Not in particular. I thought it was just more so how I was approaching each match that made me feel like these were the best matches I'd have played, honestly, compared to it just being like one in particular, because I felt like before it was sort of like I would have a certain mindset when I would play. So what would happen is I sometimes would lose because I wasn't fully paying attention to certain things while playing, but I was doing that the whole time and I knew what I was doing wrong and right, more so than I did before. So I felt like all my matches I had control of, win or lose. So.
All right. You know, you talk about starting at the beginning of the year. We'll get that to that in a little bit. You did have to run into Dimeback, who is your teammate on Equinox, to in top four. Did your mindset change, you know, when you're facing your teammate, or was your approach any different than it was versus anybody else?
No, I just looked at it more as like who I was playing, like as just his style, not like him being my teammate, because it's not the first time I played against someone who maybe I've sparred with a lot, or maybe I've just been on the same team with. It's happened multiple times. It was more like, okay, I know how he plays, so I can't do maybe A, B, and C, but I can do, you know, this. So I had to kind of think about it as like what I didn't want to get hit by, what I knew, like weaknesses of the character, strengths of the character, and things like that. I don't think emotionally there was no conflict for me there. I think it was more just understanding like my game plan, dealing with his play style and character.
Was it sort of tough, you know, like right at, because you seem very supportive of afterwards too. Was it tough to go from like, this is the guy to put me out, to, oh, I want to see him win right afterwards?
No, not at all. Actually, it wasn't hard at all. Just because I knew he had worked this whole year to get to this place. He had been traveling the whole time to different countries, just nonstop, just hardcore, just so passionate about being here. Me, I didn't really get that that chance. I was in school the first half of the year. So what I had on the line was, though it was important, it wasn't the same as to what he had been doing. So I was like, man, you know, he deserves this. And I hope he is able to carry through to the end.
We have a question from chat. C-Trigger101 says, quote, she got emotional after her loss. What was she thinking right after that?
Oh, after I lost to him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was like, man, I knew right away that the things that I did wrong, I was disappointed that I couldn't, you know, close it out. And the third game between us, I missed some really key points where I could have easily brought it back in certain games. And I think I was just disappointed that I couldn't close it out or make it closer at the end, but definitely wasn't disappointed about, you know, him at least advancing. I was proud of that, though. And, you know, hope to come back stronger if we ever play again.
Right on.
What were your thoughts sort of, we talked about it a little bit during the show, but what are your thoughts as a player on the event as a whole? You know, the format and, you know, everything that happened that weekend.
It was exciting. It was very overwhelming at first because I had never been to a final for Tekken. I'd only sat kind of at home and watched them from Twitch. And to actually be in another country experiencing just the special treatment that all the players got, how well the tournament for last gen's qualifier was ran and the finals, except for maybe like a few mess ups here and there. Honestly, just it was a good feeling because there's so many tournaments where like, you know, Tekken's there, or but sometimes it doesn't always feel as special. Like, it's not given maybe certain respect maybe by like people as a whole, or sometimes it just it's chaotic. Sometimes the tournament's just chaotic. But even though there were 320-ish competitors at, you know, last chance qualifier and just tons of people at the finals, it felt like they were prepared pretty much for everything. And they're very understanding of the players. And these are people who care so much about Tekken as a whole and the community, and been with them to the end. And I know a lot of them, so it felt like it was a good end to a great year of Tekken growing in so many ways and getting more people and producing a lot of great players. So it was great. I wasn't surprised actually that it was that good.
Yeah. Speaking on that, you've been in the Tekken scene for a while. So you've seen, you know, where Tekken, you know, even a few years ago wasn't necessarily treated as like one of the big games. How is it going from that to now where it's sort of like in this big three with Street Fighter V and Dragon Ball FighterZ, where it's all sort of generally on that same level?
Like, how does that feel? Or like,
yeah, how does it feel?
About time. Because I remember I started in Tekken Tag 2, like competing, and you know, people would ask me, "Oh, you play a game? What do you play?" And I'd be like, "I play Tekken Tag. I play Tekken Tag 2." They're like, "Oh, what's that?" And I'm like, "Are you serious? You really haven't heard?" Oh, okay. Like, and then I start to pick up on like our numbers were always lower in regards to entrance compared to other games like Street Fighter. We would have like maybe 50 to 100 entrants. And to me, I always thought that was huge, right? Because I'm thinking, oh man, like, this is a major. And then I compare that to now where we get like, Evo, we got 1,500. And before it was like way less than that. And now at majors, we see just like international players coming all the time. And it's like 100, maybe between 100 to 300 because the game's gotten so popular. And people get more exposure because of that too. Players that have been solid and just well-rounded for years now getting more recognition that they deserve because there's so many eyes being drawn to the game now. It's about time. And I'm glad it's finally getting the support that it deserves because it's definitely one of those fighting games that if you study and you practice and you put in that work, you see it pay off. And it doesn't matter how you play. Like, you can be as creative with your play style, and none of that matters. Like, it's so unique in how anybody can approach the game a different way. As long as you're solid, you can use any character. You can still beat people in matchups, though it may be a little harder. As long as you have the right mindset and you have the dedication, like, Tekken's the kind of game where it rewards you so much in the end that it's like, man, it makes you feel so good when you start seeing improvement.
Do you play any other fighters?
I played Soul Calibur.
Okay, well, I guess that makes sense, right? In the same somewhat family, if you will.
Yeah, it makes it easier to kind of transition between. I used to play both equally.
We have some questions here from the chat. So Angel Hunter 48 wanted to know if you played other fighters. You already answered that. Incross wants to know if you're going to sub to Julia on her stream.
Oh, wait.
Because she's a streamer now in this iteration of the game. I'm going to steal Steve's question here. What character would make you want to hug Harada, run on stage and hug Harada?
Let me think, because if there was one character, none of them, because I already have mine.
Good point.
You know, you were talking earlier about how you can win with almost any character. And we saw that with Rangchi winning the Tekken World Tour Finals. How do you think the balance sits in this game? Do you think anybody is way too strong or way too weak?
No, actually, I don't. I think it's very balanced. I mean, there are characters that have maybe better moves to deal with matchups across the board. But the fact that I saw a panda player, take on Devil Jin, beat Mishimas, which are supposed to be some of the best characters in the game, right? Obviously, that can't be that true if you have a panda. I mean, but yet again, it goes back to Frank Chu is a fundamentally sound player as well, so uses panda strengths, tries to remove the weaknesses, and it's just completely very, very balanced. I don't find it to be I don't think there's overly strong characters, but I feel like there's some that might do maybe more damage, but everybody even has a combat factor too, with their rage drive, so even then it's it bounces out that way. So I can't think of any character that's overly strong or too weak.
Where do you think where do you think I can talk, I swear. Alyssa, where do you think she sits on there?
Oh, Alyssa?
Yeah. I can talk, I swear, I promise you.
I would say A plus, S minus.
Damn, that's pretty high. So that's why you play her, of course. She's so high on the tier list.
I'm used to everybody saying their own character. Yeah, solid B. B plus, so downplaying their own characters.
I'm not gonna downplay her. Only because, her comeback factor, the fact that she can whiff punish from maybe about range 0.5 to 1 and get a full combo and a tailspin and you can win with, that's a clutch comeback at the end kind of thing. You barely have any life. Her movement, her punishers, it's very strong. Her chainsaws, she has a power crush from chainsaws. She's so safe. And you can kind of hide her weaknesses like that. I think you have to be very creative to use her, but I think her damage, her neutral game, her movement specifically, she can step things that other characters cannot. And it always surprises people when I do certain things because it's I didn't know you could step that. Well, you can't. She can. So, and the fact that her stance kind of locks down opponents, along with kind of fooling them to thinking they can punish something when they actually can't, that's huge. She's not straight. She's straightforward with her neutral, but she's not straightforward with her chainsaw gimmick stance, if you will. And I think that's a nice balance for high level play. So A plus, S minus for sure. Yes. Yes.
All right. So let's back it up a little further. Just not just for the weekend, but 2018 in general. Because you've been on a heck of a journey. Starting at E-League, how did that come together?
How did E-League come together?
Yeah. Did you sign up? Did they call you? Or?
Oh, man, let me tell you. No, that's the crazy thing. I was at school. And I was, Tekken's so fun. Seven's really turning out well. I get an email. I got an email from Anakin. A Facebook message from Anakin, I believe. And he was like, hey, what's your email? And I'm like, it's this. And I'm thinking to myself, why don't I just give him that? And I'm thinking, Tekken stuff, I'm sure. He said it was Tekken related, I believe, but I didn't know for what. Then I get an email and it's like, you have been invited to E-League, Tekken Team Takedown. And I'm like, what in the world is this? I read a little more and I was like, wow, this is huge. I'd never heard of E-League at the time, but I knew my friends told me it was huge. And then I get another text. I get a text asking if I want to be a captain, one out of the four, and I'm like, this is no way this is happening to me. I'm like, oh man. And I always wondered, what? Why me? But they wanted I believe they wanted good players from kind of each region, or players they knew would bring a good show, and that's what happened.
It was one hell of a show. Are you kidding me? You're underplaying it there. You're underselling it.
Okay, but maybe I am underselling it a little bit, but okay. The experience was I will never forget it. The treatment we got there was I never experienced anything like that. Every time I needed something, I needed gum, because at the time I was a huge gum nerves. They brought me like 3 packs of Orbit, made sure we had each room in a certain area before you go up on the stage had Tekken. And we were like, oh wait, Kenny, which was like the guy kind of running a lot of what was going on, we were like, Kenny, we don't have the DLC. We don't have, I think, it was like Eliza, maybe Geese, I forgot, like just whoever was new at the time, and the stages, we didn't have the stages. They were on that so quick. They downloaded stages and like whatever additional DLC was there. And they were just on top of everything. It felt like Tekken was finally getting like a nickname it deserved, along with a lot of its players. I'll never forget what happened there. And I always see things like that on TV, but actually to be on that stage, like, and having the team that won it and contributing to, and taking out some of the best players that there are, and there was one point I probably would have never believed I could have done it, but I proved something to myself, I guess, that day, not even thinking about it.
And you also proved something to a lot of people at home, and this is maybe a controversial topic, and I hope that you don't take it the wrong way, but that a female gamer can perform at that high level, that's something that comes up sometimes, and we have some tweets here. When I read this, I thought this is extremely supportive, but there were people who were like, she's not a top female gamer, she's a top gamer. This is a tweet from Alex Myers. Cut, of course, should be an inspiration to any female gamer wanting to be a top player. Super solid, great composure, great neutral, wholesome-ass personality. Good stuff, Cut. Looking forward to seeing how you do next year. Now, we love Alex Myers. We think he's great. I don't think that he means anything but positive vibes are to you. But and we have some other tweets here we'll get to in a second. But how do you feel as a gamer and as a pro gamer and as a top-level gamer? Is that all it is, or do you take pride in the fact that you're a female top-level gamer?
I love this question. It's something I get asked kind of a lot. Not like that usually, but like in another way. But I am... the reason why I've improved so much is it's not because... I never think about, man, I'm a woman and I'm doing what other women might not be doing. That's huge. Like, well, it's more like I want to be good for like for myself. Mm-hmm. Because when I get on stage, I was telling my managers this. I'm like, when I go on stage, I don't want to look free. I don't want to look bad. Like all this work I do, and then I go up there and I get like body like 6 rounds straight, like that's not what I'm here for. So I just want to make sure I look good for myself, because I didn't all this training, and you want something to show for that. Mm-hmm. For that, like but at the end of the day, I do always like kind of make it a point to say like representing women in the fighting game community by how I play, but also women of color, because I don't see it often enough. Maybe top women of color, like in their game. I don't see it often because there's not a lot of us. Maybe it's just, you know, we're getting there. But I think it's definitely a combination of both. Kind of just like the more exposure I get, I do realize how important, I realize even more so how important that is to represent, like be, like, I'm a top gamer, but I am a woman and I am setting an example. Mm-hmm. So I think what Alex said had a lot of truth and weight to it. I know people were like, oh my gosh, but should be across, it's just a good gamer in general. Yes, but that's not, but this is, we don't see women top level like that all the time. We don't. And when you see somebody doing that, but also being like having a good personality, just the whole package, that is something worth noticing and talking about, and that it does exist, and that hopefully later on down the line, because other people see that, other women will do that too.
100%.
But they are ready. And so, yeah, that's what I think.
Steve, do you want to add to that, or should I read some more of these tweets?
It's 7:30.
we don't want to step on Ultra Chen, and we did have a couple other topics we want to hit at. I do just want to read some of these tweets. This is from Pink Diamond. She says, "Don't get me wrong, I love all y'all in the FGC, but I'm rooting for Cuddlecore. Other than her, fuck all y'all bitches." Then we have Kayane, which I imagine would be, you know, quite an honor to get a message from somebody that has such a pedigree in these types of games. She's the queen. Oh my god, I'm rooting so much for her. Cuddlecore is way too sick in this tournament. Can't breathe. You responded to that one, and people can find that tweet. Do you have anything to say about, you know, some of the support you've gotten from other female gamers, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, Kayane, I love her so much. I was at Evo this year, and I was on stage. And after I played a Kuma player, and I beat him, and I was like, yeah, got this. And she was watching that. Then I had to play Naroma, and I lost the first game. And I was close to coming back, like it was 2-2 and 2-2 rounds, and I lost. And I was like, oh, man. I get off the stage, I'm a little discouraged because I'm in losers now. And she's like, hi, Cuddle. And I'm like, oh my God, Kayane, hello. And she like, we follow each other on Twitter. So we, you know, we talked a few times. She's giving me like pointers, and like, she, I kind of like poured my heart out to her about like some of the adversity. That we both dealt with, and she was it felt good to talk to somebody who, you know, has been doing this for a long time and has dealt with some of those things. That being a woman in gaming, the pros and the cons, and so seeing her this time at Evo, she said she was like, hey, you know, it's okay, she took it off, and she watched my match in losers, and I lost that one too, and she she said, hey, just work on your pressure and work on dealing with being under pressure. And because she plays Tekken as well.
Right.
And she gave me like good advice on that. She was very encouraging, and she said, just keep practicing and keep it up. And I don't know. It felt really good because she respects what I do. Mm-hmm. And I respect her. There's no animosity, no nothing. It's just genuine. And she watched me at E-League. She watched me this weekend. And I was like, you know, thank you so much for the advice you gave me before, because I took it to heart, and I worked on it. I worked on the things I wanted to. And she helped with that. It's just in her positive attitude made me feel better. I felt like I wasn't alone. Some of the things I've dealt with and still do at times. Big Diamond, well, she's always in my corner, and I'm in hers, and I love her to death. I love her don't take crap from anybody attitude. I think people tend to want to try and pin maybe women of color and like women in general against each other, and I'm pretty sure people have tried pinning me against her, just like, oh yeah, they should fight each other. But the thing is, that's not what we're about. She always like cheers for me when I play, and she's like, no, you know, kick butt, you know. She's just always, I don't know, she's always been really good to me, and I care about her a lot because we've been through a lot of the same things with the community, and yeah. She's a really hard fighter too, so.
And that was just a small sampling of tweets. I mean, I could have pulled like 20 more easily with a lot of positive reinforcement and vibes and people just being, you know, I feel like somebody like you has the power to draw people to the community in a way that you might not expect, in that it's like the things that you already discussed, but also just that positive vibe and the entertainment value of seeing you do well and just getting invested in you. Unfortunately, we are out of time, and we're going to have you back because there's a bunch of other stuff that I want to talk to you about, including some of this. I saw that you have some really interesting art on a site, and I just want to ask you about some of these. I have questions,
okay.
But this is really cool. So you'll have to come back and join us sometime, and we can do another interview with you. Unfortunately, we only have about 30 minutes on the show to talk to you.
Oh, no problem. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank Absolutely. You for staying up late with us tonight. Go get some sleep.
And have fun in Amsterdam. All right. Well, thank you so much to Janelle Carter, Cuddlecore, and Steve Ace King Offsuit Jurek for being on the show. We will see you guys next week.